Welcome, everyone, to the Q&A session for our upcoming course, Healing Our Political Divides, the 7-week journey to reunite and strengthen our families, communities, and our country. This is Lisa Bonice, and I'm fortunate to be hosting this important and timely Q&A call for the Shift Network, where we'll explore the teachings of Mark Gurzon and address questions about his upcoming 7-week course, Healing Our Political Divides, which begins next Thursday, September 8th. Later, I'll explain how you can participate in this course, even if you can't attend the live sessions, but first, I want to introduce our guest. For the last 30 years, author, activist, and transpartisan political thought leader Mark Gurzon has served as president of the Mediators Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to incubating projects that promote mutual understanding and the common good. In 2006, he published the best-selling book, Leading Through Conflict, How Successful Leaders Transform Differences into Opportunities. His newest book is entitled The Reunited States of America, How We Can Bridge the Partisan Divide. In just a few minutes, we'll open up the phone lines and the webcast for your questions, but first, I want to welcome Mark, who will begin our call by leading us in an opening exercise that will sort of give us a sense of what his course might be like. Welcome, Mark. It's so great to have you with us tonight.
Lisa, it's good to be with you and good to be with everyone. And I invite everyone to just take a moment before we dive into healing political divides. And just let's ground ourselves because we're on a conference call and we are all sitting there in our homes or our offices or coffee shops, on this call. And I just want you to check in for a moment and notice your body and notice your body and just go right up it. You've got a left foot and a right foot. You got a left hip and a right hip. You got a left shoulder and a right shoulder. You're listening to me with a left ear and a right ear. Notice how you've got a left and right in your body. And then notice, right up the center, your spine, your heart. Notice that you've got a center, a core, that holds you all together and that you're one, that there's one body there participating in this call. So at this very moment, we are both left and right, and we are one. And I just invite us all to ground ourselves in our bodies and feel that reality before we start talking about politics and really let ourselves feel the empowerment and the embodiment of being in our bodies while we're on this call, because our bodies actually have a lot of the clues to how we can heal political divides. Back to you, Lisa.
That's awesome. That makes so much sense. And I think that's a really great way to start out because we really are, out of many one. We are one country, and we're all of us hoping for the best to come out, no matter who we're going to vote for. So, great. Thank you for that opening. Those of you who are listening, we have the rest of the call to dive into your questions for Mark as we prepare for his upcoming course. Once again, it's called Healing Our Political Divides, and again, it begins next Thursday, September 8th. And if at any time during this call you want to learn more, please visit healingdivides.com. That's the two words squished in together, so there's no space, healingdivides.com. And when you're there, you will see a full description of the 7-week course. So let's go ahead and get started with your questions. If you are calling in on the phone, go ahead and hit *2 on your keypad to ask a question out loud. Again, that's *2 on your telephone keypad. And for those of you who are listening on the webcast, you can type your questions into the little chat box there on the page, and I will be happy to read them out loud to Mark. So now that we've all got the instructions, let's see what kind of questions we have, because we do already have a few waiting for him. Let's start with this one. This is from Randy. Randy wants to know, do you see any evidence within Congress itself that gives you hope that partisan divides can be healed?
Well, it's a great question, Randy, and it's a very timely one because I just met with a congresswoman yesterday, a Democrat, who is partnering with a Republican partner. And she told the story about how the two of them are working extremely hard on mental health issues. And she said that actually it's not that hard for a Democrat in Congress to find a Republican on an issue and then work together to make progress. And I stress on an issue because what we found is that the structure of Congress is such that no one will ever say, oh, yes, I'm a healing political divides congressperson. They won't identify themselves as that generically because it's like being on a football team and saying, oh, you're going to be loyal to both teams. No, no, you can't be loyal to both teams. You have to be loyal to your team and want your team to win. So there are team members, but as team members on specific issues, they can reach across the aisle and work together. And I think that's, Randy, what we should be encouraging as voters, is we should be encouraging these partnerships across the divide on issues. That's, I think, the key, and I think it can work on almost any other issue, and we'll be discussing in the course some of the issues where that's already happening. And I think it's one of the most powerful and positive things. But one more note, Randy, that to really make that something that happens often in Congress so that it's not the exception but the rule, we're going to have to deal with gerrymandering and campaign finance reform, two issues that we'll discuss in the course that can get in the way. But one-on-one, it's happening all the time, and I think we need to sing the praises of the Congress people who are doing that. Back to you, Lisa.
Right. That's a good point. I want to ask you, I listened to your call with Stephen last week, and you were talking about a retreat that you went on with members of Congress. And I'm wondering if, for those who didn't hear that, if you can give just sort of a brief description of what that was. But then I'd like to know, have you had any further contact with them about trying to incorporate the ground rules on Capitol Hill that worked at the retreat?
Well, the retreats that you're referring to, Lisa, happened in the late 90s. So it's been a full 20 years. Since those retreats, and they marked the only time when Congress has, in large numbers, we had over 220 members of the House of Representatives, so that's over half the House of Representatives, went away for an entire weekend to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and spent the entire weekend working on improving their relationship. And that happened in 1997 and 1999, and that was one of my deepest, I was the designer and facilitator of those retreats, and it was one of my deepest experiences with Congress, because they really let their hair down and they talked from their hearts because they were in a safe place far away from the press. And it was a very powerful, for me, insight into the way Congress works. And going back to the previous question from Randy, I worked for a committee in Congress that consisted of five Democrats and five Republicans who were mandated to run the retreats. And they hired me. So I actually experienced five and five working on the same committee as my bosses, so to speak. So it was a very inspiring experience for me because it showed me that when you break through the very toxic structure of the two parties and the way they're structured to fight each other, when you can break through that structure, these are fine men and women, for the most part, who are ready to work together and able to work together in our best interests. But that's only when you take them out of that rule structure and give them an opportunity. So the ground rules we're going to get to, I'm sure, during the course of this hour, because, Lisa, it relates to a couple of questions that have already come in. But I will say that the ground rules that Congress developed will be part of our course. I'll be sharing with you exactly what ground rules made Congress behave differently. And those ground rules, I think, are extremely relevant to anybody who wants to have a meeting in public about a tough issue facing your community or region.
Okay. So how do you think... How did we get here? I mean, I don't think anybody on either side can deny that this is the craziest election any of us have ever witnessed. And it just seems the last election and the one before that, they were a little nutty, but it's getting progressively weirder. How do you suppose this happened?
Well, the metaphor I use, Lisa, is that the oil light on the dashboard of democracy went on in the mid-90s. That's when it became clear in Congress, which is why they hired me. That's when it became clear in Congress that the Congress wasn't no longer able to work for the American people. That's why they spent all this time, energy, and money on these retreats. And I saw the red light go on, and the red light went on 20 years ago. So if you have a car and the red light goes on and it says you need oil, and you don't do it for 20 years, what's going to happen to your car? I mean, truly, at least it's a miracle the government is still working, because it hasn't had an oil change in all that time. And I think that's what the American people who are supporting, you know, fringe candidates or candidates that aren't in the mainstream, or even some who are supporting candidates in the mainstream, I think that's what so many disgruntled voters and citizens want, is they want an oil change, you know. We actually want the car to start working again for the best interest of the American people. And that's, I know that's a metaphor, but in the course we can dive in deeper to what that really means.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a question here on the webcast from Mary. This is a rather long question, so give me a second to go ahead and read this out loud. She says, I co-chair an adult education forum at my church, and we're in the midst of trying to plan for a discussion with each other about our own experience of the political climate in this country and its effect on us personally and as members of a religious community that purports to honor and respect each other as children of God. We are struggling with how to have a deep discussion without offending the minority of staunch Republicans in our midst. New Hope to start with the premise of St. Ignatius' prologue, which speaks to defending the proposition of the other. Any thoughts about having a healthy exchange and ideas for ways we could proceed toward healing the division in this country as a faith community?
Well, it's a great question, and it's an important one because, you know, most churches that I've been in have Democrats and Republicans and independents and synagogues, and it's just a natural thing that there'll be some political diversity. The last major church I worked in was in Kansas City, and, you know, they have 60% Republicans and 40% Democrats. And, you know, the minister is, you know, every Sunday morning he knows that he's speaking to, you know, people in the pews who are going to vote for Democrats and who are going to vote for Republicans. So he's aware of that. And I think the key, to go back to our previous conversation, is ground rules. What I would recommend happen in that church is that before the meeting starts, the organizers of the meeting say, let's set some ground rules. We're about to have a conversation about our feelings about this election. What are the ground rules that we want to have operate? And, you know, I'm glad to share the ground rules from Congress that I've been using for 20 years, but I never tell people to use those ground rules. I always say, here's a starting point. Come up with your own ground rules. And what are those ground rules that will make your church community or your faith community or your you know, your school board or your library association or your parent-teacher association at your school, what are the ground rules that will really create a conversation that is productive, caring, respectful, and leads to positive outcomes for the community organization? And those ground rules are almost always, Lisa, those ground rules are almost always 90% the same, because the fact is human beings know when they feel safe and when they don't. And certain ground rules make us feel safe, and other ground rules don't. And I think that's the key I would recommend to the person who asked that question. Set some ground rules in your church community before anybody says a thing about 2016 politics.
Okay, that makes sense. And I think that to carry this question a little further, it also is sort of bleeding over into, and if anybody plays on Facebook, they know that there are friendships being lost over this election because the opinions are so strong that it's gotten to the point where we can't even exchange ideas anymore without name-calling and like vitriolic hatred just spewing onto people's pages. So how do you, and then family dinners, how do you handle those kinds of things where you're actually really connected with these people? It's not just people you don't know. These are people that you want to carry on a, you know, a friendly conversation with.
Well, I recently wrote an article, in fact, it was last November for Thanksgiving, that was called How to Have a Political Conversation at Your Thanksgiving Dinner. Because, you know, last November was when we were starting to realize that it was going to be a Trump-Clinton kind of campaign. And
right.
We realized we were heading for a very tough year. So a lot of people were asking me, well, Mark, you know, we're going to have Thanksgiving dinner. And so the first question is, you know, many families will say no discussing politics or religion at the table. And that's something that a lot of families think is a loving way to deal with this. And I find it, you know, very understandable but very sad when families do that, because what it means is that they're saying we can't talk about our own country and the way it's governed, because talking about it will threaten the very love relationships that we have in this family. And I don't think that needs to be the case. I think there's a way of setting family ground rules at a table. And there's a couple simple principles, and one of them is that, you know, you're not there to change anybody's mind at the table. That's rule number one. If you're there to change people's minds, it's no longer a Thanksgiving dinner. You know, it's a political seminar where you're trying to persuade people. And the second ground rule is you know, equal time. That what often kills family, you know, dinner table conversations is that somebody takes over and speaks and kind of tries to dominate the whole thing. And everybody feels like they're You know, they're in an echo chamber listening to one person. So there's some basic, simple ways to set the ground rules of the family dinner table, just like there was in Congress.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a question here on the webcast from Skip, who says, given that Trump could win, and that would be a huge setback for the progressive agenda, do you intend to distract people from voting for Hillary in this election?
Well, that's a very interesting question, because it suggests that somehow healing political divides is trying to get people to change the way they're voting. And that's not the purpose of the Healing Political Divides course. We're not trying to distract people from voting for Hillary or distract people from voting for Trump. We're trying to get people to bring a different consciousness to voting and to bring a different consciousness to how they deal with politics as a whole. So we often use the word transpartisan, meaning that if someone's a transpartisan Democrat or a transpartisan Republican or a transpartisan Independent, it means that they have their own political beliefs, but whatever their political beliefs, they want people with political differences to work together. And to me, that's the key. I do believe that, you know, on November 10th, when Hillary Clinton is president or Donald Trump is president, on November 10th, that's finished. That drama is over. And the real drama of governance begins, and that's how are they going to work together. So if Hillary Clinton wins, and she's right now by several points in the lead, if Hillary Clinton wins, will anything actually happen because she's in the White House? Well, it will only happen, something positive will only happen if they manage to work together effectively with a significant majority in the House of Representatives who are determined to make her fail. So it comes down to something we're going to talk a lot about in the course, Lisa, which is relationship. That the whole question of who wins on November 9th is important. But I personally believe that far more important is the relationship between the winners and losers on November 10th and November 11th and November 12th. That's what determines what actually happens in America that affects our lives. And while it's extremely entertaining for us, who occupies 1600 Pennsylvania, I mean, it's always fascinating to see, you know, we love personalities and we love to see them move in and we get to see the family dramas. But what really matters for our lives in terms of, you know, the schools our kids go to or the health care that we have or which wars our sons or daughters have to fight, those issues are going to be determined after the election, and they're going to be based on the relationship between the winners and losers. And that's where our energy is going to be focused in healing political divides, is that question of how do you work across those divides in your family, your community, the nation? How do you work across those divides regardless of the way the vote comes down on November 9th?
Right. Okay. Now, you're mentioning the course. I noticed when I was looking at the homepage, let me read that off to everyone again so they can check it out, healingdivides.com. You're going to be having a lot of different guests for your various the modules. Can you tell us a little bit about who you're going to have with you and what they're going to be sharing?
Yes, I wanted to have guests, Lisa, because you know, I have a lot of experience in this field over 25 years, but I'm just one person, you know. I happen to be, lean progressive myself, although I'm definitely an independent, not a Democrat or Republican. But I thought it was important, for example, to have a Republican as one of the guests so that participants in the course, if they're liberals, can really hear a Republican and how a Republican thinks. And I thought it was really important to have a negotiating expert, William Urey, be part of the course, because I'm not an expert on negotiation. And negotiation is extremely important as a set of skills. So we have one of the greatest negotiators in America as part of the course. And similarly, I'm a man, and I wanted to have at least a couple of women on the course who could bring a kind of expertise that and a kind of experience that I don't bring myself as a man. Another expert that we have is going to be talking about the role of the body and how do we ground ourselves in our body and stay in a way centered in a way that we're not thrown off by political debates, because often we immediately lose our center and we start to get angry. Our heart rate goes up. Our breathing changes. We get. The word that's often used is flustered. But flustered is a physical experience. And how do we ground ourselves in our bodies so when we're in tough conversations, and they might be political, but they can also be in our marriage or at work. When we're in a tough conversation, how do we keep our body, you know, grounded so that we can be effective and have a sense of empowerment? Because many people, when they start discussing politics, Lisa, the first thing that happens is they start to feel, oh, helpless. Oh, well, I've got no power anyway. I've just got one vote. And you can hear it in their voice. You can see it in their posture. we tend to look kind of get deflated, and how do we avoid that and stay grounded in our empowerment? So I can't do all those different skill sets, Lisa. I felt that I needed some guests to help me, and we have six remarkable people, and I look forward to sharing them with the course participants.
That sounds awesome. It really does. And it seems like this, aside from this being really timely because it is right before a really contentious election, these are really good skills for us to have just in general. So I'm wondering if you can sort of share what are some benefits that someone will see in their life when they improve their conflict resolution skills?
Well, that's an intriguing question for me because I've often taught conflict resolution to people in companies or public organizations, and one of the things they'll say to me at the end is, you know, something along the lines of, "Well, I'm going to spend fewer nights at home on the couch because of this course." In other words, they think it's going to help them in their marriage, that it's going to help them with their kids, and to me, that's one of the great benefits of doing this work. We happen to be focusing on healing political divides, but that's not the only benefit that's going to come. I think there'll be benefits that you'll find that no matter what conflict situation you're in, some of the skills we're looking at translate really well. And I'll mention just one that, you know, that we've talked about ground rules. And it's remarkable to me how in marriages so many people have never set ground rules for tough conversations. So although we're going to focus our ground rules on healing political divides, I think most course participants will say, "Wow, I found that useful if I'm married in my marriage or with my kids or at work." And because the truth is, in the end, you know, conflict, while it varies from setting to setting, it has certain basic dynamics. And I think the more we learn about those dynamics, the more effective we can be.
Okay. Well, what do you think are the most important keys to successful conflict resolution?
Well, I think one of the first is to know what your goal is, because a lot of people get involved with conflict and the first thing that happens is they get triggered by something the other person says. And I've seen people get into conflict situations where they actually, within about 30 seconds, you can't really tell if you just suddenly dropped in, you can't tell what they're fighting about because there's no longer a sense of two competing goals because they're so triggered. And I think that's one of the principles that's important, is to remember your goal and stay focused on it. One of the things I've learned from my colleague William Urey, who will be a guest on the program, is that let's say you're negotiating about something and someone, you know, says, you know, how untrustworthy you are. Well, that's pretty triggering. You know, that's triggering mm-hmm. to be called untrustworthy. But you don't have to react to that. You don't have to start defending yourself. You're actually a free agent. And you can stay focused on the problem and focused on your goal and let that conversation pass and say something like, you know, I understand that you feel that way, but let me tell you why I think we have an opportunity here to blank, blank. In other words, that's one of the key things I've had to learn, is that I am, and this is, you know, when I say I am a free agent, it means you have to be truly grounded in your own sense of empowerment. Otherwise, you can get thrown off, and it's actually a negotiating tactic that many people use. They'll say something that's triggering precisely to throw you off your game, and there's no reason to be thrown off your game by a verbal comment by whoever you're dealing with. Donald Trump, by the way, is a master. Donald Trump is a master at that. I mean, he is a master at using insults or comments to throw other people off their game, and it's amazing to see how effective it is if you're not centered and grounded and haven't done your homework.
Right. Yeah, he sure does, especially during the debates. He does find just little pet names, you know, Lying Ted and Crooked Hillary, and these names just sort of stick, and there's not really a whole lot of conversation about what that means or anything. So, yeah, I get what you're saying. It's a shame it's going that way. But anyway, that's my opinion. I'm supposed to leave those out of this conversation. I'm wondering, what do you think about what talk radio and channels like Fox News and MSNBC are doing? Do you think that they're actually helping or hindering political unity?
Well, I think they're the fragmenting of our news sources, Lisa, have definitely hurt America, because we now can create an echo chamber, or what one of my colleagues calls a bias bubble, around us. And it's like we're living in this bubble where nothing other than our biases can ever be present, because we're controlling the websites we look at, we're controlling the programs we watch on television, we're controlling the newspapers we read, and as we control it, we create this hermetically sealed environment. And I'll be introducing course participants to an organization that actually provides the news every day from a left perspective, a right perspective, and a center perspective. And I think it's one of the most exciting internet breakthroughs that now we can get the news from all three perspectives, and we can learn exactly why those perspectives exist, and we can clarify our own feelings and our own beliefs and learn how to deal with people with different beliefs more effectively. So the bad news is I think those networks that you mentioned make things worse, but there's some wonderful breakthroughs in the media that will give us resources that we've never had before.
Well, that's good to know, because Edward R. Murrow must be spinning in his grave to see what has happened to journalism. It's certainly not what it used to be. On another topic, what would you tell somebody who thinks that they alone can't make a difference in the functioning of our democracy?
Well, the first thing I'd say is you don't have to be alone. You don't have to be alone, because the truth is, it's that feeling of being alone that I think the power structure likes to cultivate in us. Because when we do feel alone, we say, oh, I'm alone, I'm just going to go back to work, or I'm just going to turn on the television. I believe that you don't have to be alone. All you have to do is find kindred souls. And I think in the final part of the course, I'm going to be talking about several dozen organizations where people who felt alone around an issue reached out and found people who felt just the way they did and are now doing something to heal political divides. And, you know, it doesn't have to be 1,000 people. It can be 3 or 4. 3 or 4 people in a community can make a huge difference. So that's the first thing I would say, is you're not alone. And secondly, I would say, even if you, when you are alone, there's things you can do. There's things you can do to increase your own knowledge and capacity to be a bridge builder, someone who builds bridges across divides. In your family, at your place that you work, your place of worship, there's lots of places where, even alone, I think we can make a difference. So those would be the two things I'd say. A, you're not alone, and B, even when you are, you can make a difference.
Okay. Excellent. We've got another question here from the webcast from Jeanette, who wants to know, if someone refuses to listen to your reasoning or budge from their position, is there anything you can do other than walk away?
That's a great question, because, you know, people will look like they're refusing to listen. And I think one of the things you can do is follow up with inquiry and model listening yourself. So if I say, you know, I'm a strong supporter of Donald Trump, I think he's going to make a great president, and the other person's, you know, not listening to me, I can inquire. I can say, well, I can say, you don't seem to be listening to me. What's your resistance about? Let's say I'm a strong supporter of Hillary Clinton. I think she's going to make a great president. I say to somebody, I'm voting for Hillary, and I think she's going to be one of the most amazing presidents we've ever had. And you can tell that they've just totally shut you out. I think you can say, you know, I see that you're shutting me out. You don't feel that way. What do you feel? And so pretty soon you'll find that when you listen, one of the things Stephen Covey said, and we'll be looking at Stephen Covey's work in the course, one of the things Stephen Covey said, one of the 7 habits for highly effective people is seek first to understand and then be understood. So if someone's not listening to you, listen to them.
Okay. What if it resorts to name-calling, though? Again, this goes back to what I was saying about Facebook earlier. I've tried really hard to not express my political opinion on my Facebook page, but I'll post like various articles that I see here and there, and I try to be as, you know, bipartisan as possible, but people will get really angry and literally start name-calling. How do you deal with that?
Well, you're now raising the whole question of internet communication. And
yes.
And the internet ground rules are a very different ballgame. And I think the first thing to know when you're talking about the internet is you don't have to be there. So you're there by choice. And if you are there by choice, if you are on Facebook or you are using, you know, Snapchat or Instagram or Twitter, you are entering a technology that is often without ground rules. It's faceless, anonymous, and without ground rules, except whatever ground rules, you know, the company that runs that wants to apply. So I would say, keep in mind, you know, just like you wouldn't put, you know, boiling hot water into a, you know, a plastic Dixie cup. Don't put boiling hot political opinions in certain online forums, because it's not a container designed to be where your views are going to be respected. And I'm not saying if someone wants to put their political views on Facebook, go ahead. But don't expect it to be a thoughtful conversation like it would be among your friends in the living room, because it's not going to be that way. And I feel very strongly that the internet is not, while it has certain wonderful qualities, I don't feel it's a great place for political dialogue, because it's extremely hard to create ground rules that are conducive to real mutual understanding and problem solving. It's much easier on the internet to use it for hit and run drive-by attacks. And that's not what we're looking for when it comes to healing political divides.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. So I'm also wondering, too, I'm recalling a conversation I had recently with somebody who disagreed with me politically, and they started bringing up, stories that they've read online that I don't know for sure are true or not without running to my computer and doing my own research. Do you have any suggestions on how to be involved in conversations where there are possible conspiracy theories and possible lies, and you don't really know what is the truth behind the stories that are being told? How do you continue a conversation with that, like that, without getting into an argument? Do you know what I'm saying?
There are several organizations that are basically political fact-checking sites, and you know, they can be useful if you're seriously engaged with somebody who consistently uses information that you think is false and misleading and just simply wrong. There are some sites you can go to that can be very helpful with that. But the best thing to do is simply say, you know, I would really appreciate knowing the source for information. How do you know that's true? This is something that the spiritual teacher Byron Katie talks a lot about, is how do you know that's true? And if someone says, yes, it's true, and then you say, how do you know that's true? It's a very relaxed and informal way of saying, you know, I'm not persuaded. And most people will, and then I've actually done this with members of Congress, Lisa, and I've said to them, you know, they'll be arguing in one of the seminars that we did off-site, and they'll be arguing about some issue in front of Congress, and I'll say, well, Congressman, how do you know that's true? And I'll say to the other person on the other side, what's your evidence that what you're saying is true? And what I've found in those conversations, Lisa, is that serious people, honest people, will say, well, it's just my opinion. And then once you have people with opposing opinions, I think what I did with members of Congress is I said, well, why don't you form a fact-finding committee with people from both parties where you look into that issue together and come back to our next meeting with the facts about that issue? And I found it was a really wonderful and very low-key way of building bridges. But you have to get people to the point where they'll say, we actually don't know the facts. And if the person's a dogmatic and rigid person and they won't do that, I'd say you're in a position where you're dealing with somebody that's you're not going to have a productive conversation with.
Right. Okay. Well, can you give us an example of how parties on either side of a divisive issue were able to find common ground while still holding firmly onto their positions?
I can. When you say find common ground while holding firmly onto their positions, it sounds a little contradictory, because is it common ground mm-hmm. if they're holding firmly? Well, I think what you're saying is, have you seen relationships between adversaries become stronger even while they held on to their own positions? And the answer to that question is yes. I'll give you two examples. One is the classic conversation run by one of the organizations we'll be profiling, which was called the Public Conversations Project in Boston. And they did a five-year dialogue between pro-life leaders and pro-choice leaders. And what they found after 5 years was that the pro-life leaders and the pro-choice leaders continued to hold on to their positions, but that behind those two positions, the relationship between the people and the organizations changed completely. There started to be mutual respect. They started to develop collaborative projects on areas that they did agree about. They socialized with each other. and they stop talking about each other in a derogatory manner, and they change the kind of language that they use to talk about their pro-life and pro-choice positions. So the debate or the disagreement did not go away, but the relationship went from toxic and even violent to respectful and caring. And if you think about it, that can make all the difference in the world. So that's one example. Another example, which I'll talk about in detail in the course, is on climate change. My colleagues and I worked together to do a retreat for Al Gore and some of the climate change people with the folks who were taking out the attack ads against his movie An Inconvenient Truth, who were adamantly opposed to climate change and considered it a hoax. And we had them together for 2.5 days, and, you know, the folks who, you know, believe climate change was a real threat, who are allied with Al Gore, continued to hold that position, and the ones who took out the attack ads continued to feel that suspicion and mistrust for the people, mostly liberals, who were on the climate change side. But what happened, again, was that the relationship changed, and Al Gore learned what he was doing that angered them so much about the way he talked about climate change. He learned why they were so afraid of the climate change issue that they would, in a way, lie about it and pretend that it didn't exist. And the folks who were pretending that it didn't exist stopped saying that there was no such thing as climate change and really went down a level deeper and said why they felt it was a, you know, why they felt it was a liberal conspiracy to gain more power, to expand government, to put more restrictions on freedom and small businesses. And in other words, they got down beneath the surface, Lisa, down to the real issues that they had. And again, their relationships changed. What's missing is that the private breakthroughs that happened there have not become public breakthroughs. And that's why this field that we're talking about in this course is so important, because this can't be something that only happens in private where people have breakthroughs and learn to understand each other at a retreat center. This has to become something that happens in public forums and city councils and school boards, state legislatures and in Congress. It has to become part of our public life where people work through their issues and come to common ground.
Well, what was it about the way that Al Gore was saying these things that made them so upset and dug their heels in?
Well, at that time, which was, you know, in the early part of this, in the early 2000s, Gore was speaking about it almost always with, you know, with the sense that government was going to have to do something about climate change, and government was going to have to do set new policies, and government was going to have to take it seriously, and it was as if it was all about government, and that instantly makes conservatives suspicious.
Right.
Because instantly they hear, oh, well, there's going to be a new expansion of the Environmental Protection Agency, there'll be a new expansion of those powers, there's going to be more rules for small businesses, there's going to be more constraints on individual freedom, there's going to be more government regulations saying what individuals can and can't do and what we can and can't buy. Whereas they think what they think is that the private sector needs to be the leader in this. And when you start talking about how the role the private sector can play and the way it can strengthen the private sector and create new jobs, suddenly they're willing to concede that, well, maybe climate change has some reality to it, and, well, maybe we should be taking some precautions in case it is true. And suddenly you've got some common ground, because this pro-government, anti-business bias, which sometimes creeps into liberals' talk, was exposed. And one of our speakers, one of our guests in the course, Bill Shireman, who's the president of Future 500 and who's a Republican, is a real pioneer in this. And he's learned how to speak about climate change. So conservatives and Republicans go, wow, this is a real opportunity for us to express our values and express our beliefs. And we don't have to, you know, stick our heads in the sand and lie about the science. We can stand up for our beliefs and deal with issues about climate change in a way that's, you know, that's true to our values. So it's going to be an exciting part of the course.
Right. That's fascinating. I didn't know that that's what the problem was. I always just wondered, and now I've got that answer. Thank you. That's it just makes so much sense when you put it that way, that, of course, if we can just stop finger-pointing and demanding that the wrong people do something about it, then, yeah, it just sort of dissolves all those walls, doesn't it?
It does. It does, and I think it goes back to what we said earlier, which is, you know, there's absolutely no substitute for listening. That's what Jeanette's question earlier was about, was what is the role of listening. And It's absolutely essential because we think there's some kind of shortcut. But I found in my marriage, my relationship with my kids, my colleagues at work, if you don't listen, it's not going to work, period.
Right, right. So much sense. So how can someone, anybody who's listening here, how can they tap into the resources and connections of the larger community to support them in their own conflict resolution efforts?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the last module of the course is going to be dedicated to talking about organizations that are active in every part of our culture that are healing political divides. I'm going to go through courses, organizations that are happening on college campuses, organizations that are doing healing political divides work in faith institutions, organizations that are doing that in business, ones that are doing that on the community level, ones that are doing that between mothers and women. Literally every part of our culture has healing political divides projects and organizations that are operating. Lisa, the unfortunate thing is that because all we hear about is Hillary Clinton's emails and Donald Trump's hair,
right,
we don't find out about these organizations. And that's why I'm so glad that the Shift Network is featuring the Healing Political Divides course, because it's a chance for people to find out what's actually going on. And I think there are also some media resources that I'm going to be talking about that that people can, in an ongoing way, say, if you want to really learn about projects and efforts that are crossing the divide, there are media outlets that are specializing in that. You won't find that on Fox, and you won't find that on MSNBC, but there are places you can go where it can make a difference.
Okay. All right. Well, time's going fast. It always does during these calls. We have time for maybe one or two more questions. So, folks, star 2 on your telephone keypad if you want to talk directly to Mark, or go ahead and type your question into the webcast chat box, and I will read them out loud. And before I take any more questions, I just want to mention once again, the name of the course is Healing Our Political Divides, and this is going to be an important 7-week journey where Mark will guide you through the fundamental skills and competencies you'll need to heal partisan divides and to build respectful, mutually beneficial relationships. And this 7-week course takes place on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific time, starting next week, Thursday, September 8th. But if for any reason you can't join us live, that's fine. You won't miss any of the teachings or any of the guests that Mark will be having. You will receive audio recordings of every module, transcripts, and all course handouts through your course homepage. And also, we offer a no-risk money-back guarantee on all of our courses, giving you a full 2 weeks until September 22nd, in this case, to make sure that you're connecting with the materials. And as an added option, all participants are welcome to interact within a private Facebook community group, and I assume we'll have ground rules there so you can stay connected with one another. Also, everyone who registers receives the Healing Our Political Divides bonus collection. These are some great bonuses. The first one is a transpartisan action guide prepared by Rebecca, Nunziato.
Nunziato.
Is that correct? Okay,
yes,
and that's
what I was referring to earlier, Lisa, that's a guide that basically says here's 45 organizations that are doing healing political divides work, and people can see which one appeals to them.
Nice. Okay. All right. And then the next bonus is the American Citizens Empowerment Package, which is the entire package of downloadable MP3s and transcripts from the Shift Network's American Citizens Summit. I've listened to numerous calls within this package and great information in there. You will also receive an audio dialogue with Stephen Dynan entitled Practical Strategies to Evolve Our Democracy. So there's a lot of good stuff that comes along with this course. And again, before we go on to any more questions, Mark, what are you most looking forward to sharing in this upcoming course?
I think what I'm most looking forward to is the interaction with the course participants, Lisa, that I know I'm going to be bringing up 3 or 4 issues as case studies on how you can heal political divides. I'll be bringing up the issue of guns, for example. I'll be bringing up the issue of education, and I'll be bringing up a few others that concern me and that I think are ripe for healing political divides. But then we're going to have a whole module where course participants are going to bring up their issues, the issues they're dealing with, that they want us to practice the tools and skills we've learned in the first few modules, that they want us to address. And I'm really looking forward to finding out what are the issues on the course participants' minds, what's happening to this, you know, this cross-section, this focus group of Americans in the middle of this political election, and to really spend an entire session really applying healing political divides methods and tools to the issues that are concerning them. What are they going to be bringing up? Are they going to be bringing up how they vote? Are they going to be bringing up, you know, immigration? Are they going to be bringing up things that are more personal, like, you know, family dinners or community meetings, or like the question we had earlier, what's happening in my church or synagogue? I'm really looking forward to that and learning with the course participants about how to heal those political divides.
Okay, that sounds great. Okay, so we have a question here from Vic. Vic says, VoteSnoopy.com suggests that we don't vote for a person but a message, using Snoopy as a metaphor to break down political divides that you speak to. What would this do to our political landscape? Could it move people into new conversations or new candidates that people feel better about, or maybe even evolved forms of governing? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the concept of registering the fact that your own kind of consciousness has moved beyond this red versus blue, Clinton versus Trump, that your own consciousness is not satisfied with that kind of, you know, combat. I think that's fantastic. And VoteSnoopy.com sounds like I haven't seen that site, but it sounds like an innovative, fun way of registering with the, you know, powers that be, hey, I'd like our system to change. Obviously, I don't think it's a substitute or an alternative for voting. You bet I'm going to vote on November 9th, and I hope everybody who participates in this course does too. So clearly saying I'm going to vote Snoopy.com and not for the candidate of my choice, I think, is a mistake, because they're the people who are going to decide how the budget's spent. They're the people who are going to decide what we send our sons and daughters to war for. They're the people who can decide who gets across the border and who doesn't. They're the ones who are going to, you know, reform or not reform our educational institutions. So I'd say do both. I'd say vote and vote for the candidates you believe in on the state, local, and national level. But yes, and I'm going to, and this is what I'm hoping also happens in the course, Lisa, is we're going to find out about not only VoteSnoopy.com, but we're going to find about AllSides.com, and we're going to find out about LivingRoomConversations.com. And we're going to find out about, you know, no labels. And we're going to find out about a whole set of things that we can do that will register the fact that, you know, we are not just red, we're not just blue. We're free, independent, creative Americans, and we want to be heard.
Right. Well, this actually brings up another question. What do you think about people who do protest voting? They don't care for either of the main candidates, so they're going to vote for somebody who they know doesn't stand a snowball's chance in hell of winning, but they're registering their distaste. I've done that one time before, and I felt really rotten when my candidate didn't end up winning. What do you think of that kind of thing?
Well, you know, again, I sympathize with somebody who, in this case, would go vote for a, you know, libertarian or green candidate rather than a Democrat or Republican. It makes perfect sense that you want to register your feelings. My question is, you know, is that the smartest way to register your feelings? Because the truth is, pulling the lever for a libertarian or green, I mean, if you truly believe in what they're saying, that's different, you know, I mean, there's no law that says you have to vote for only winners. But I guess my point is that there are other ways of registering your feelings, and I think that's what's exciting about the organizations that we're going to be profiling. They are actually giving citizens a voice, and they're actually letting people who might vote for Snoopy or vote for a protest candidate, they're actually letting people's voices be heard in the halls of power. So I think that's, to me, again, it's a both and. You know, register your protest, but not at the expense of affecting the way power actually gets distributed in Washington.
Right. So then, on that along that same vein, what do you think of candidates like let's just say Ralph Nader, for example, where he knew
You're
he
still
was
working
upsetting
through what you did, aren't you?
I am. I feel so bad. It was my fault that happened. My one vote ruined that whole thing. But what do you think of somebody who enters a race like that, knowing that they're not going to win, and that they are going to perhaps take votes away from somebody who probably should have won instead?
Well, you know, we're getting a little bit into the weeds with that, because that example is 16 years old, and I don't think we're going to ever see that situation again, because you know, I think most people have learned that if you want to affect the outcome between the two leading candidates, you have to vote for one of those two leading candidates. Otherwise, you're voting for someone who's not going to be, you know, president or senator or whoever it is. However, I really respect your impulse to vote for Ralph Nader, just like I will respect, you know, people who vote for the Libertarian and Green candidate, because they're registering that they want something different in our politics. And I think what they really want, I don't think they really want, you know, to be honest with you, I don't think they really want a Libertarian or Green candidate. What I think they want is a system that works. And what we're going to be talking about in the course is that a system that works is not a system run by liberals. It's not a system run by conservatives. It's not a system run by Greens or Libertarians. It's a system where people with different points of view work those different points of view through and create creative solutions for the common good. And that's the system we're looking for. And that's what we have to keep our eye on. That's the ball, is getting a system that works and heals political divides. So the truth is, I mean, voting, while that's fascinating to everybody, who am I going to vote for, who did I vote for, who should I vote for, I'll go back to the point I made earlier, Lisa, that what really matters to America, what really matters to us, is what happens on November 10th. And that's how are the winners and losers going to work together. That's where the course is going to be focused.
Okay, perfect. All right. Well, we're almost out of time here, and this has been a fascinating hour with you, Mark. I want to thank you for being here, and thank you, everyone, for listening and for your questions, and to Mark for sharing your ideas with all of us on the call today. Again, Healing Our Political Divide starts next week, Thursday, September 8th, and again, please visit healingdivides.com to learn more and to register. And before we go, Mark, do you have any final words for our listeners?
Yes, just anybody who's taking the course, please be thinking about how to apply all this to your life. Where the real value will come is not from listening to other people, how other people are dealing with the issues they care about. The real value comes from your deciding that, you know, I've got an issue, I'm taking this course because I've got something happening in my family or my church or my community or my state legislature or my feelings about America or an issue I care about. Come to the course knowing what you're working on and speak up and let us know what you are working on so we can bring it into the actual meat and substance of the course. Because like I said earlier, this is a chance for American citizens who want to move their consciousness beyond red and blue and who want to really experience with other Americans the possibility of doing so and recreating the United States of America, or as I call it in my book, the Reunited States of America. That's going to require people to put some skin in the game. And so I encourage everybody who's taking the course to really think about what is that issue that you care about, and let's play together.
Okay, that sounds awesome. Well, once again, thank you, Mark, for being here, and thank you to everyone who joined us tonight. On behalf of all of us at the Shift Network, I wish you well and look forward to having you on this course or perhaps another one in the future. Have a great evening.